Spoon River Anthology is a groundbreaking collection of free verse poems by Edgar Lee Masters, first published in 1915. It is composed of epitaphs, poems spoken from beyond the grave by deceased residents of Spoon River. Each poem reveals the speaker's secrets, regrets, triumphs, and relationships, often exposing the hidden truth behind their public personas. Howard Taubman writes in a theater review in the New York Times in 1963, "Although Spoon River Anthology never was meant for the stage, it has been transmuted into a glowing theater experience. The remarkable thing about Spoon River Anthology is the way its disparate little autobiographies merge into a unity. On the printed page, and even more vividly when quickened by sensitive actors, these epitaphs, spoken from the grave, evoke the sights, sounds, and smells of this town, Spoon River. And before the performance is over, the specific time, place, and people become an emanation of the spirit of America. That spirit, as Masters felt and conveyed it, was open and optimistic, though he was well aware of how often the promise of life was betrayed. He appreciated the comedy and tragedy around him. His denizens of Spoon River chortled and guffawed, suffered and sorrowed, schemed and aspired. They were cussed and generous, cynical and trusting, false and true and touching. Masters stripped them clean in a few words as he let them look back wistfully or ironically on lives misspent or lives fulfilled. He was not above using a character to build up to what we would call a gag, for his sense of humor was boisterous. But brooding over his spectral anthology is an unswerving fidelity to the motives and relationships of people as they are. Not a drama, this Spoon River Anthology is dramatic from moment to moment because the fine and versatile actors constantly distill character, giving fullness and emotion to each bit. Not a full-length drama, this Spoon River Anthology is rich in humanity and like a brooding and loving American poem brought to life on stage. That from Howard Taubman's 1963 New York Times review of a stage adaptation of Spoon River Anthology by Edgar Lee Masters. Even though there is no direct connection, much of what Taubman observes about Masters' glimpses into the souls of the characters he brings to life from the grave, Julie Esty, founder and artistic director of the Dearly Departed Players, has developed a theatrical experience that takes viewers to a cemetery and moves them through the rows and rows of those long gone, stopping along the way to introduce us to individuals who still have something to say to us, the living. It is the annual Dunmore Cemetery Tour, this Sunday and next. Julie Esty stopped in at the WVIA studios with Roger Mattis, a member of the troupe, to introduce us to the tour.
The Dunmore Cemetery Tour is a two-hour walking tour through a historic cemetery in Dunmore. It is free to the public. The tour takes about 2 hours, and on that tour, visitors will meet people who were buried in the cemetery, and those people will tell them their stories from the past. I have costumed interpreters. They are known as the Dearly Departed Players. And we have been out there. I'm out there now in the cemetery doing tours about 27 years. The Dearly Departed Players are out there now about 22 years. So we're a much anticipated autumn event that happens in Dunmore every year.
And you are not just drawing people from Dunmore or Scranton or Lackawanna County. People come from all over now.
Oh, yeah, I had a phone call a few weeks back from a woman from Florida who's coming, and she wanted to know where she got a hotel and how long it was going to take. Usually they're coming from all over the state of Pennsylvania and the tri-state area. But every once in a while, we get somebody that comes. When I talk to them on the phone, I will say, if you do make it, stop me before the tour and let me know. And they do. And they're like, we're here. We made it from Florida. So it's really wonderful to have these people coming into our area to learn our history.
And Roger, you are a member of the Dearly Departed Players. How long and what drew you to the company?
I've been a member now, what, about 10 years, I think.
Yeah, at least 10. This.
And so I'm a relatively newcomer to the group, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's been a really fun time. I consider myself a little bit of an amateur local historian, and I love the history aspect of this. And what I especially like is that Julie has put together histories of people that you wouldn't necessarily hear from, and not necessarily the rich and famous, although they're included. There are some characters who lived and lived well and have their own stories to tell as well.
And Julie, we know how hard you work and how much research you do and continue to do and have done. When you are struck by a name or a date or both and you say, well, let's see, how do you go about giving life to somebody who may not be the person for whom Dunmore was named or whatever?
Everybody has a story. I have a story, you have a story, Roger has a story. It's my job to find that story. So I might come across a name, and a lot of times what it is I just go out to the cemetery, and years ago I used to have to write everything down on paper. Now I go out with my camera and I photograph graves and I start to look for people. And I might look for Joe Smith. But what happens is on the way to look for Joe Smith, I end up on a whole other avenue and I find a whole bunch of other folks. And I've said to you guys, I have had tours planned out and it ends up to be a whole bunch of other people that I had no clue even existed. Where they turned up from, how they got there, how they end up in the binder, I don't know. Usually it hinges on one person. One person that I didn't know was out there will flip the whole thing.
And so you go to obituaries? What else do you...
Everywhere. The information comes from everywhere now. It comes from obituaries, you know, all legal records. It comes from being out there. Families send me information. And you have to realize, too, that I'm doing this now almost 30 years. I have file cabinets filled with people. I mean, now I also write now for the Dunmorian, and if I don't know who to write about, now what I do is I just open a file cabinet drawer and reach in and pull out a folder. And whoever I happen to pull out might be the person that I write about, because there's just so many of them at this point.
Do you like to have at least some sort of thread or theme for each of these tours? How does it work out that you have someone from the late 19th century and maybe somebody from 20 years ago? What is about balance and variety and they speak to each other? I don't mean literally speak to each other. Do you have a concept at least?
Sometimes there's a theme. And when that happens, I don't really have a theme planned out. I will have people that string together. Usually what happens is these people will come across my desk and they play well with my cast. So my cast and Roger and Wendy and everybody else out there are a big factor, like who I'm matching up with who. They have to work well with this crew here. If you ever notice, Roger, a lot of your people from the past have been funny.
Yeah.
Because you're a funny guy. You're good with comedy. I mean, and you go out there and you're really good with it. So that's where some of these people will come along. Like, they had odd circumstances that probably were, when they were happening to them, really horrible. But when you look at it now, it's like, wow, that really happened. Or they've got, like, Roger this year has information to convey about a certain type of death. And even though we think we shouldn't be aware of that type of death, we should be aware of it. And Dave Byers, one of our newer members, he's going to talk about a death in a theater, an old theater, and all the modern things that came from that. Why we have lights in theaters, why we have, and I just learned that these were called panic bars. Is that what they
Yeah.
Panic bars.
Well, Well, one of the things that I think I've noticed is that Julie may have an idea and it brings some characters to us. And the more we play it, all of a sudden we see some of the humor. First of all, the cast, most of us have some sort of a macabre sense of humor. And we see some humorous anecdotes that come out of these things. And all of a sudden, what Julie may have intended to be a very serious story, all of a sudden we get a lot of yucks out of it.
All of a sudden. And that's what's wonderful about the Dearly Departed players. All of these people, while they might be real, or they were real people, and the events that happened to them were real events, what I'm doing is just putting words on paper. Everything that I have in that binder when I pass it out on the first day of tour rehearsal is just words on paper. It's Roger that makes it that person. It's Dave that makes it that person. And Roger's right. When we all get together, these guys, especially my guys, they're hysterical. And they find things that, like, I didn't see that are funny. And they put the laughs in all the seriousness that I see with all this death, death, death all the time. So I could not do this without them. They're perfect.
You have more than one you're playing?
Well, this year, in addition to having the one character I'm playing, I also have the honor of introducing everybody to the tour this year, which is something new for me.
Yeah.
I've been doing that. Dr. Robert Powell has been doing it for many, many years, and he's taken a different role this year.
Roger has had some good ones, though. He was one of the golfers that got electrocuted together on one of the local golf courses. And, you know, that ended up to be like a public service announcement the year that we did that, because people aren't really aware of what you should do when there's an electrical storm. Well, Roger and his companions that he died with golfing ended up making the public service announcement so funny. But through their humor, they got so much information across. And sometimes humor works much better than the lecture. And he's perfect with it.
And you have things like that which aren't accidents. You've had murders. Mm-hmm. You've had all strata, as you were suggesting, of life. And you are gifted as not just a writer and a researcher, Julie, yourself, but you play characters.
This year, I portray a woman who doesn't have the best circumstances in life going on. She is married to a gentleman who does not treat her appropriately. And, you know, from time to time, we address issues in the cemetery. We've addressed women's rights. We've addressed spousal abuses, you know, cancer awareness. We've addressed a lot of different subjects through the use of these people from the past. What we have going on now isn't new. It's all happened before. We're just different players.
And that's one of the things I really enjoy about it, is it is the history. And this year, the character I'm portraying is a part of our history. He's not the lead character, but part of my story involves one of our very famous people from the area. But the famous person isn't the story in this particular case.
And so we also learn then something about, if you're doing something from the 30s, the 1930s, we learn something about what Scranton might have been like in the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we talk about Scranton, how it was. Roger, not to give a lot away, but Roger talks about deaths that occurred in a lot of buildings downtown and how they occurred in all these buildings. So it does shed light on a certain facet of what was going on down there. Nelson ends up falling into a sewer, and Nelson survives, but how Nelson ended up in the sewer explains a lot about how life was in Southside before the turn of 1900. So, yeah, we are touching on how this area was all those years ago.
What about costuming?
Costuming is a fun story. Julie works overtime in collecting all sorts of garbs from various historical periods. And she will come to every rehearsal with a car trunkload full of new costumes. I must have about 17 vests right now that she unloaded on me. Try this on, try this on, try this on. And eventually we get one or two costumes that will play the part. But yeah, it's a little trial and error. And, yeah. And you know, sometimes they fit, sometimes they don't. But it's fun.
Don't forget, too, we're costuming them in the cemetery. They can't take everything off to try everything on. So we're doing the best we can. In fact, that's one of our scenes this year. We actually have a married couple on the tour portraying a married couple. We have Laura and John Doyle, and they are going to portray, fabulously, by the way, from rehearsals last night, costumers that lived here in Scranton, in downtown Scranton, in the 1800s. And they had a line of costumes, makeup. They had an ice cream store in their establishment because they had to adapt because while we did have more costumed events all those years ago in the way of socials and stuff like that, they still had a family to support and costume, just doing costumes wasn't doing it. So he was like a steamship agent, a real estate agent. They had a barbershop in the place. So this store did all kinds of things. But we actually do have costumers on the tour this year, and the costumers will have a giveaway. Sometimes we have little goodies, like, and we can never have enough for everybody. I have to say it, we can never have enough for everybody that's in the audience, but there will be some little goodies handed out this year.
When you are creating a scene with a married couple who are costumers who are playing a married couple, Julie, to what degree do you, I'm not saying that you channel these people, but how do you have a sense that you are bringing the Doyles to life in a way that is representative of what they might have been interacting like as a couple?
I really have to say that I can't claim credit for that because I gave the Doyles the piece of paper and said, take it and run with it. And they have taken it and run with it, just like Roger has taken his persona this year, and he's running with it. Dave, he's another one. Dave is with us, and he has been interpreting historically many years with the National Park Service. He's another one. He's portraying a Civil War prisoner of war, and someone who was in two, his other persona is someone who was in two very famous national tragedies. And I can't take credit for the people that you see other than I give them the paper and the costume. They do it. The dearly departed players are wonderful.
And while we can't necessarily know exactly how these people were, what personalities they have, we can apply our own knowledge of how you would react to a particular circumstances and how your personality would deal with this situation.
And they're doing it so long. They're absolutely wonderful at it. Who were you, Canada Bill, the guy that blew into town? He was a grifter.
I was a grifter.
He was a card-playing guy or whatever. Like, I just knew he was going to do fabulous.
I tried to make that more like Mr. Haney on Green Acres coming in.
But the thing is that this vehicle is getting so much history out to people. Like, I had someone stop me. I was at Rail Fest. What a fabulous event, Rail Fest with Steamtown. And somebody stopped me as I was motoring through Steamtown because I've been doing some stuff with them in the period dress. And somebody spewed back all this information about someone that was on the tour years ago. And I was like, wow, I can't even believe they remember all of that. So what we're doing out there is working.
And at the end of the shows, a lot of times people will come up from the audience and start talking to you and relaying their information on as if they're telling you about one of your friends when it was actually one of my character's friends or something like that, somebody's grandchild or something like that. And it's nice. It's a connection.
And we have had family members, I've had them, come to me and they're like, that's my great-grandmother. Where is she buried? Because they don't know. So I'm like, okay, it's over the hill behind this one, blah, 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 blah. If you need more information, I have where I found all my information and index cards. I will send you the notes so that you can find your family member. You know, it carries on even after all of us leave. And this year, in addition to us being out there, we do have people decorating the mausoleums again because people love that. They bring their kids and stuff like that and they photograph. We're going to have Scranton Rocks join us. And I don't know if you're familiar with Scranton Rocks. Did you see any of the rocks last year?
I saw a few of the rocks.
They're beautiful.
Last year.
They're a group of people who paint the most beautiful rocks, all different designs. They leave their little rocks all over the valley. And it says on the back, please, if you find it, you can either keep it or rehide it. But they like if you would take a picture of it and post it to Scranton Rocks on Facebook. And this group leaves stuff at like the hospice organizations, and they're little glimmers of joy, beautiful pieces of art. So they are going to come through on both tour days and blanket the cemetery with their artwork for people to find. Now, people might find it the day of the tours. They might find it. I found a rock weeks later, and I was just so happy. What we're doing out there not only helps in the way of history. With the cemetery decorated for the week, we found out it also helps people who are mourning, because they come in and they see this, and they said it's such a comfort. So the Dearly Departed Players are really doing something different in a very different type of theater. Other thing that we have going on this year is 5 Masonic Lodges are participating with us. Explain what you did last year.
Well, I played the part of one of the Masons, original Masons from the local chapter. And the real Masons came in and honored the founding of that particular chapter. And it has some very historic roots right there in the cemetery. And we knew it was a sacred grounds of the cemetery, but we didn't realize it was a sacred grounds to the Masons, too, as far as the founding of that particular lodge. And they took it very seriously.
There's actually, I hate to use the word secret, there's a message on the hill for the Masons. And I figured it out many years ago. And when I did, they turned up all those years ago. Last year, I felt that after all the years of the story being dormant, that I needed to bring it back. Because you know what? My number could come up at any point. So I wanted to put it out there one more time. And I had to get a hold of the Masons because the Mason that helped me the first time around had passed away. So they came out last year and they were just over the moon that their history was being represented. And they asked me if I would let them come out and portray these guys for themselves. So 5 Masonic Lodges are coming out. I believe they're coming in their tuxedos. I was going to costume them. They're going to look fabulous. I think they've let Grand Lodge know higher up. So we've got some really nice people joining us this year. We have the crew, and I love them. It's a rough time of year for all of us because I'm like ready to turn into a pumpkin at this point, which is every year at this point. But you know what? They go out there, and the Dearly Departed Players rock. They're good at what they do, and they are a good group of people doing a good thing for this area.
Tell us the dates and times.
October 5th and October 12th at 2 p.m. People should get there probably about 1 o'clock, 1:15, so that they can park on the street. We will have a table with our program. We might have some exhibitors. We're going to have people, Scranton Films, the Lackawanna Historical Society, Carlucci Golden DeSantis Funeral Home, Catherine Williams Mullen, Kim Rosard DePrimo Bocchicchio, and the Lackawanna County Agency on Aging, in addition to the Madison Mattis, are going to be decorating mausoleums or graves. And if I missed anyone, I apologize.
Can't forget the Dunmore Rotary Club.
Yep. And it's just wonderful to see people coming out and decorating graves for people that haven't had anything on them in well over 100 years. And those mausoleums out there are beautiful works of art. You know, it's not just history. We've got everything going on out there. We have science, we have architecture, we've got math. It's 3 different types of theater. It's environmental, site-specific, because we are portraying people in the places where they actually are, and promenade theater. So that's what we are. We are unique to this area.
And if you're not familiar with the Dunmore Cemetery, it is one of the most gorgeous places in northeastern Pennsylvania. It is a beautiful cemetery. The town of Dunmore has just embraced the cemetery as their central park, where people are walking their strollers around and jogging. And it's a very, very pleasant atmosphere. And in October, when the trees are starting to turn color, it is just breathtakingly stunning.
Julie Esty, founder and artistic director of the Dearly Departed Players, and Roger Mattis, a member of the company, speaking with us about the 2025 Dunmore Cemetery Tour this Sunday and next. Start time 2 o'clock, but Julie suggests we get there a bit early to make sure we're able to park on the street. And the walk is about 2 hours, and so comfortable shoes are in order. And in addition, there is a chance to see people who have display tables, to interact at the end with the Dearly Departed Players, ask questions, share stories. And they have a Facebook page, and you can find them at the Dearly Departed Players. The Dearly Departed Players. Also, there is a touching documentary on the tour, and Julie, it was produced by Scranton Films and Luz Cabrales, and you can find it online either at Scranton Films, and it may in fact be more widely available. That's the annual Dunmore Cemetery Tour, and it's this Sunday and next at 2 o'clock. And for more information, check Facebook, the Dearly Departed Players.